Blog Talk Radio.
Absolutely. James Bostic here, Conservatives Perspective. This is the live incarnation. And, of course, we do that Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, here at Blog Talk Radio under the studios of the Patriot Nation Radio Network. And that's an awesome place to be. We have a recorded version that goes out on Sundays to the Talk America Radio Network. And you can find them at talkamericaradio.org. And they have two streaming channels there. They have the Liberty Stream and the Justice Stream, ACP, heard on each one of those at various times and days throughout the week. Well, let me tell you about this weekend. It was a great weekend. This last weekend was the 50th anniversary of the West Virginia Special Olympics Summer Games. They started way back last weekend, 1st of June, 1968. I was but a wee little nipper. I was about 6 years old, hadn't any clue about it. Well, we fast forward to 50 years into the future, 2018. Terrific gang of kids. A number of counties were there. Not all 55 counties were represented, but there were a number of them there. And we had a terrific time. The Raleigh County Rebels, the track team that I helped coach, brought home 30 medals in their respective divisions. And that's kind of what I call, you know, this. And this weekend, speaking of perspective, a conservative perspective, this weekend was awesome in terms of re-energizing and refocusing my own perspective. And if you notice the bug that I place, you know, the hook line is all are winners. some are champions and others not so much. And I just came across some terrific kids. And I'm not talking about the kids that I was responsible for coaching. There's a few of those boys that I am insufferably proud of. But I'm not going to get into that. I had one kid who he's one of my boys from school. So I'm with him all the time. And I just felt like he showed promise as a shot putter. And mom and dad wanted him to come out for the track and field events, and he did. And in his first time competing with the shot put, and he didn't have a whole lot of time to practice, he still scored a bronze medal in his division. And he went on to win another medal in the turbo jav and got a couple honorable mentions in like the fourth places. They only do the three medals. But then after that, they have a division of participation ribbons. And he got a couple of those. And I'm exceedingly proud of all the kids, not just the Raleigh County Rebels and the swim teams and all the kids that I know, but all the kids that were there. It was just a great group of kids, a great group of moms and dads and the people that were associated with the logistical side of everything, the organizers and the people at Laidley Field. The big fat tip of the hat to you guys. And I was talking about this with a friend of mine not too long ago, and the list of worthwhile things that I've done in my life is not a particularly long or spectacular one, as a few long-term former friends and one ex-wife will happily attest. And I'm okay with that. You know what? I'm a late bloomer, and I've been doing some good things in the last few years. But when I look at that list, albeit however small it is, my involvement with these kids and doing what I do in the school business too, but especially this thing with the Special Olympics, that's up there. That's in the top three. And, you know, you're looking at a guy with a list of probably maybe 9 or 13 tops worthwhile things he's ever done in his time. And these guys, it's just great. It was just great for me on a personal level. And I just absolutely gloried in watching these kids compete and watching them win, you know, just the joy of being out there and doing what they love to do. And, I'm definitely the gainer for that. So that was a terrific weekend, and hats off to everyone who was involved in that. The moms, the dads, the kids, the volunteers, you know, the coaches, everybody. And their motivation, everybody's motivation was the same there, I think. And fundamentally that was, you know, let these guys have a chance to compete. Let's hope for some good weather. And it was for the most part, a little bit of rain here and there, but it was good weather for the most part. And, you know, they were able to compete. They were able to go out there and show themselves as well as their peers what they had, what they were made of. And that's a tremendously, tremendously rewarding thing to see. And I'm just happy that I had the opportunity to do it. And more than anything else, I'm happy that I had the good sense to listen to my friend Jocelyn when she was browbeating me into doing this. And it was the best thing for me to do. And I can see myself doing it for a long time to come. So that was a terrific thing. Well, those are the champions, all those guys. Some of the others we're going to talk about, well, maybe not so much. Got a quick question for you. Why do you hate science? I know it's kind of a weird offbeat question, but that's the question, according to Daniel Greenfield, a frequent source of material here for this program and a remarkably intelligent fellow. That's the question that the progressive left these days has taken to asking non-leftists. You know, the left claims that they love science in as much as anyone can love a method for testing a hypothesis and accuse their enemies of hating it. I mean, how can anyone love or hate an impartial, cold, indifferent set of techniques? And how can an ideology, the left, that believes, and think about this, that believes technological civilization is destroying the planet, can really claim to love the science behind it. But let's do this. Let's trade a couple of words. Let's swap out the word science in that question, why do you hate science? And let's substitute God. So now the question, why do you hate science, makes perfect sense. So do these constant assertions of love for science from the left. But they're not scientific assertions. They're passionate, emotional, religious ones. You see, actual science doesn't care whether you love it or you hate it. That's not how you engage with the theory of relativity. But religion can be measured by love and hate. Either you love a deity or you hate it. No one loves or hates science. But they do love something else, something disguised as science, and that is scientism. Well, actually, it's called, I think I said that wrong, scientism. Scientism is this. It is science without its core component of skepticism. It takes the ideas of science and it uses them to create an infallible belief system that gives our lives meaning and dictates how we should live those lives. In other words, a religion. Now, contrary to popular disbelief, religion does not need a god. It does need some things, though. It needs a creation myth that explains our lives. It needs and I'm using my air fingers quotes on this, an enlightened leadership. It needs the conviction that every person's actions matter. And there you have it. You have redemption, salvation, and damnation, miracles, an imminent apocalypse, and a prophesied golden age. Now, scientism offers all these things and so much more. Its creation myths inevitably lead to philosophies about our place in the universe. Its miracles are technological in nature. Its heroes have superpowers or spaceships. Global warming is on its way to destroy us, and only recycling and green energy can save us from this climate apocalypse. Its truths are considered to be infallible because they are prophesied by PhDs wielding hockey stick graphs. Its God is the Homo progressivus, born of an ape and ascending to singularity in synthesis. Its heaven is a social service agency. Its saints died for social progress. And if you want angels, we can throw in some UFOs. But nature abhors a vacuum. We cannot have good unless we have evil. So what about the devil? In the early days of scientism, superstition was the great antagonist of modernity. Technological progress had made a new type of civilization possible. And scientism, not science, scientism was born out of that thrilling encounter with the future. We no longer believed in confessing to clergy. Instead, we have our minds scientifically psychoanalyzed by Freudians. The imminent apocalypse had nothing to do with heaven, but everything to do with the class conflicts of capitalism. Our legends would no longer be about the past, but the wonders of the future. Our enemy was the past with its tradition and its ignorance. The past is dead. Religion is vanishing in Europe, and America is catching up to it. Morals are as outdated as phrenology. No one believes in the golden future anymore, least of all the worshipers at the chromium altar of scientism. Scientism had created a god of endless progress, the collectivist human engine of innovation, and now it turned him into the devil. like Zoroastrianism, Scientism becomes a dual religions of two gods. One is evil, one's good. The Ahriman of Scientism builds nuclear weapons and power plants. It drills for oil. It drives an SUV. It launches spaceships and it shops with plastic grocery bags. It's a Ura Mazda, rides a bike, saves trash for compost, eats only locally farmed food, and he gets his power from the sun. So the left, with its scientism, at the same time worships and demonizes science. It loves it. It hates it. Its mission is to save us all from the ravages of science. And if you question that mission, you are accused of hating science. Now, the scientism of 1918 and 2018 are both snapshots of a philosophical schism that tore the left apart. In 1918, 100 years ago, the progressive left reviled the capitalist, but they admired the collectivist order of his factories. Its vision, basically at that time, was to turn all of society into a factory without a capitalist owner. Social problems would be solved by experts. Organizations would impose efficiency. Global governments would end war, hunger, and put to death people with flawed genes. The priesthood of public service would replace the service of God. In 2018, the left reviles the factory. Its brand of scientism is an ugly half-breed, half-hippie, half-technocrat. It's convinced that science makes it superior and equally convinced that science is a cold, sterile philosophy of dead white men that cuts us off from the true intensity of feeling of the noble savage. The 2018 scientism romanticizes rural living and handicrafts and religions that behead their daughters. And then it'll retweet Neil deGrasse Tyson, or Bill Nye. Let me tell you, we won't get started on Bill Nye, not yet. Okay? They'll retweet both of these idiots to tell off those stupid science haters who don't believe science is destroying the planet. Don't they realize that science is scientifically proven that science is evil? Confused yet? Well, don't worry, so are they. Technocracy, the factory model extended through the latest internet innovations and their philosophical afterbirths, are still at the heart of the left, despite its hippie affinity for local farms and trendy crafts and raw food and farmhouses in Vermont that no farmer could afford. It doesn't actually want to move to a commune. Its urban and suburban efforts to mesh yuppie and hippie show just how truly screwed up these sad sacks are. And so the left wants us all basically to live in big cities and ride bicycles to work. Yet it loves traveling on jet planes to get back to unspoiled nature. It can't stop lecturing you and I on how much it loves science between its meditation classes and the protests against nuclear power. It wants a government to use the latest technology to control every detail of our lives so that all the oppressed peoples of the world can finally be free. So scientism's schizophrenia, for lack of a better term, is basically due to the progressive left trying to reconcile the factory and the commune in erratic and hypocritical ways. Its mind is with the order of the factory, but its heart is in the commune. The technocratic systems that it inflicts on everyone else's, that they force on everybody else, uses false appeals to science as proof of its practical infallibility. They love science. They hate religion. Scientism is their religion. And that's what the left has always loved and truly loves about science. Science gives the left an unfounded sense of practical infallibility, while its projected empathy gifts it with an even more unfounded moral infallibility. So based on science and their embrace and simultaneous rejection of it, they have this intellectual, this feeling, this undeserved and unrealistic feeling of intellectual as well as moral superiority over the rest of us. So between these two things, between these two false senses of intellectual and moral superiority, the progressive left is convinced that everything it does is bound to succeed and is also absolutely the right thing to do, even if history shows the exact opposite. Every crackpot leftist theory, from Marxism to global warming, is cloaked in an inevitable something. The revolution of the working class can't be stopped. The world's bound to run out of food or oil or sanctimony. The rise of the oceans can't be stopped except by electing Democrats, because science says so. But here's the thing that the progressive left never does stop to consider when they speak of true science. Science is the opposite of infallible. As a matter of fact, its strength lies in its fallibility. Science differs from scientism and what the left embraces, because true science offers kind of a crab walk forward, because it's willing to admit errors and to correct them. Scientism never admits it's wrong. Instead, it claims that scientific testing has found whatever they're doing to be absolutely true. Then it hides the data and tries to pass laws banning anyone from questioning its absurdly premature conclusions. Global warming much, anyone? Basically, what scientism does is it strips true science of its greatest strength and builds a cargo cult around wearing a lab coat. The left hates true science because it hates skepticism, but it loves, the left that is, loves infallibility. And that's all that's left of its science. What was once the soul of secularism, a belief system bestriding civilization, now exists solely to offer infallibility to whatever loathsome nonsense the progressive left believes at any given moment. Not dead air, I'm still here. The left doesn't love science or true science. What it does love is its own power. So it cloaks itself in this mask of scientism, a mirage, claim scientism's infallibility for its own, and justifies that to consolidate its power base. Because the left doesn't love science. The left, Mr. and Mrs. America, loves its own power. Take anything else, anything that the left claims to love or care about, replace it with those words, and you'll have the right answer. The left doesn't care about abortion. The left cares about its own power. The left doesn't care about Black Lives Matter. The left cares about its own power. The left doesn't love the LGBTQ, HM, LTD, people. It loves its own power. The left doesn't love illegal aliens. It loves its own power. It doesn't care about black people. It doesn't care about women. It doesn't care about gays. It doesn't care about recycling. And we're going to talk about recycling. It doesn't care about offensive t-shirts or education or Gaza. It cares about power. Scientism is a cult of power. blinded with scientism. Bill Nye. This is a classic case in point. Now, Bill Nye is considered by a number of people whom I work with to be a leading scientific light. He's a kids show host. Before he was a kids show host, his only claim to fame was he won first prize in an Endocino, California Steve Martin lookalike contest 45 years ago. He was on some short-lived improvisational comedy show on Comedy Central. He has a bachelor's degree, a bachelor of science degree in mechanical engineering. And this has given him license to claim that he is, and people with questions about genetic engineering or how many sexes there are, or climate science, they go to Bill Nye. Does anybody know who Bob Hebert was? Well, you probably don't know him by that name, but you probably know him by the name of Mr. Wizard. Now, that, by God, was a true man of science. You can laugh all you want, people. It's the truth. I watched Mr. Wizard as a kid in reruns when he was in syndication. Terrific fella. Serious about science. Bill Nye is a frickin' is a cartoon character. But you'll see him on CNN with idiots like Brian Stelter, George Costanza looking clown, nodding their heads thoughtfully like Bill Nye is actually saying something profound. But to their empty heads, he probably is saying something profound. So they nod their heads and rub their chins thoughtfully over what they're... ridiculous. That leads me to this. Speaking of spin, and having said this, let me say this. Let's talk about recycling for a minute. And I see this a lot. And here's the problem. Every school, and I speak about the schools here in my home county, and I'm sure it's like this in all 55 counties in West Virginia. And this isn't a new story, but it kind of ties in with what we're talking about. And then this will probably coast us into the bottom of the hour and I can figure out where we're going to play music. But every now and then, the left-wing media, the liberals will shine a light on this. And the story is this, how some of the junk that is supposedly recycled is what? Well, it's actually thrown in the trash. In recent months, in fact, thousands of tons of material that's left curbside for recycling in dozens of America cities and towns, including several in the state of Oregon, has gone directly to the landfills. You know why? Well, because recycling is uneconomical, in part because small impurities in the materials to be recycled can make these materials useless. Now, in our school, as every school in the county, and I'm sure probably just about every school in all 55 counties of West Virginia, in every classroom there is a recycling bin where paper, plastic, aluminum, none of it's separated. It's basically just another it's just a large blue rectangular extra trash can. Because none of the aluminum's rinsed out, nothing's cleaned. Glasses are, when we have it, we don't have them. Plastics or whatever, they're just dumped in this thing. And at the end of the week, the ecology club, the recycling club, comes around and they take the big plastic bag of extra trash that your room has generated and they take it out to this big white storage dumpster. And this dumpster is white because this is where the recycled materials go. And aside from the occasional scrapped desk or worn out, burned up office chair, it doesn't look any different than anything in the dumpster. The cooks put more cardboard boxes in the dumpster to be taken to the landfill than goes into the recycling, nonetheless. So right now, this kind of stuff, according to Brent Bell, and he knows a little bit about this, you might not know the name, but this guy's vice president of recycling at Waste Management. If I'm not mistaken, It's the Waste Management Corporation that's responsible for handling our recycling materials here in Western. But in the Pacific Northwest, they've diverted more than 2,000 tons of paper to landfills since the Chinese ban on imported paper came into effect, because they don't like recycled materials. So they just dump it. They can't move the material to a market at any price because nobody's taking it, so they just dump it in a landfill. Same thing with plastics and your egg cartons, your milk cartons and stuff. Where are the local recycling centers located? In West Virginia, the local recycling center is located at our county landfill. So this stuff that these kids are collecting, I'm going to wrap this up. This stuff that these kids are collecting is being picked up by, you know, whatever the organization or subsidiary of Waste Management Services is, and they're taking it to the landfill. Now, I've been out there, and I've seen the recycling place there. You know, they got you know, separators, and they put all the plastic over here, and they put all the paper over here, and they got all the glass in one place, whether it's clear or amber or green or what have you. And then we left. We had pizza. They were very nice to us in the class that went out there to look at how things are done at the recycling center, gave us their spiel. And then we split after eating pizza and throwing the cardboard boxes into the cardboard recycling bin. But the odds are that stuff, it's not prepared. None of the stuff that I saw being recycled was prepared the way they want you to do it. So it's just going into a landfill because it can't be used. It is not economically viable. Because somebody's going to have to clean all the glass. Somebody's going to have to rinse out all the plastic. They don't have time for that. They're not going to do it. So they're just going to dump it. So basically, and it's going to offend a lot of people who believe in recycling, it's just you're being fooled. You're being tricked. It's kind of like a form of environmental virtue signaling. And you know the type of people I'm talking about. They have separate trash cans for everything. It makes the liberals feel good. It's like you're Captain Planet's favorite lieutenant. But the truth of the matter is the benefits behind recycling are no longer economic. In fact, recycling is at its core uneconomical. The real benefit from recycling is fundamentally psychological. The left needs it to feel good about themselves. And that's why recycling will never stop, even in pretend form. I used to be the same way. I thought I was doing good when I did this. But I've read, and this is not the first article I've seen about it. It doesn't work. It makes you feel good, sure. But it doesn't work at all. So we are down to the bottom of the hour, and I'm going to throw on something. I don't know what. Yeah, I do too. I'm in the mood for some Johnny Mercer. We're going to listen to that. We'll be back with more of ACP. Right after this remarkably entertaining musical interlude.
When Madame Pompadour was on a ballroom floor, said all the gentlemen obviously, the madam has the cutest personality. And think of all the books about Du Barry's looks. What was it made of? A toast to Paris. She had a well-developed personality.
What did Romeo see in Juliet, or Pierrot in Pierrette, or Jupiter in Juno?
And when Salome danced and had the boys entranced, no doubt it must have been easy to see that she knew how to use her personality. We'll be right back.
reality. Unless she's got a perfect personality. A girl can get somewhere in spite of stringy hair or even just a bit bored at the knee. If she can show a faultless personality.
Why are certain girls offered certain things, like sable coats and wedding rings, by men who wear their spats right?
That's right. So don't you say I'm smart and have the kindest heart. Oh, what a wonderful sister I'd be.
Just tell me how you like my
personality.
Baby, you've got the cutest
personality.
This is the G.I. Jive, Man Alive. It starts with the bugler blowing reveille over your bed when you arrive. Jack, that's the G.I. Jive. Rootledy-toot, jump in your suit, make a salute. Voot! After you wash and dress, more or less, you go get your breakfast in a beautiful little cafe they call the Mess. Jack, when you convalesce, out of your seat, into the street, make with the feet. Reet! If you're a PVT, your duty is to salute the L-I-E-U-T. But if you brush the L-I-E-U-T, the M-P makes you KP on the Q-T. This is the G.I. Jive, Man Alive. They give you a private tank that features a little device called Fluid Drive. Jack, after you revive, chunk all your junk back in the trunk, fall on your bunk, clunk. Private tank that features a little device called a fluid drive. Jack, if you still survive, chunk all your junk back in the trunk, fall on your bunk, clunk. Soon you're counting jeeps, but before you count to five,
hey, back here, James Command Performance Hope. Listen, we're just great to be here with you. This is Johnny Mercer. You guys know who that was? You ever heard of him? Accentuate the Positive, Atchison, Topeka, Santa Fe. Terrific, terrific songwriter. They did a special documentary called The Dreams on Me. You can find it on YouTube, or if you have, I think, Turner Classics. If you know, some cable systems will let you watch movies online through Turner Classic Movies. And I'm able to do that. But anyway, it's called The Dreams on Me. Johnny Mercer, G.I. Jive, Accentuate the Positive, Personality, Atchison, Topeka, Santa Fe. Great stuff. Well, we've talked a little bit about Roseanne, and I don't know what else needs to be said about that. We talked about that last Thursday, and I'm pretty much over it. I'm still... Everybody's busting her up on being racist and everything, and I don't think she is. I'm not exactly sure that that was a racist comment. I understand a lot of people think it was because in many applications, it is very much a racist comment. And I'm not trying to cut Roseanne a break. I'm not trying to give her a pass. Here's the thing I will say. Roseanne's crazy, y'all. And I don't mean that in a bad way. She suffers from mental illness by her own admission. She suffers from mental illness. We just know about the Ambien. But what else is she on? Seriously, I mean, she may take enough pills to get full in terms of her daily medications. So, you know, I'm not saying that the things that happened to her because of what she said shouldn't have happened. I'm not talking about the consequences or anything like that. I'm really not. I don't even want to get into that. That's a whole other philosophical topic. I'm just talking and how people respond. I'm just talking about, you know, whatever happened to considering the source instead of, you know, freaking out. A cartoon character, basically. Because that's what just about everybody on television is in one form or another. They're cartoon characters. A cartoon character says something that was stupid. And everybody loses their mind. Well, what did you expect? It's a cartoon character. She's a crazy one. What do you expect? I mean, you can't but they want to cut her head off and, you know, she's just the worst thing it ever was. She's not. She just said, you know, remarkably poor judgment and said something stupid. And insisted on saying it because somehow she felt that it might help maintain her relevancy, I guess. I don't know. But I don't really feel sorry for Roseanne. She's got a gazillion dollars anyway, and everybody's talking all this noise about she's throwing away her career. She already had a career. She didn't throw it away. She stopped doing it. She didn't have to do it anymore because she made a gazillion bucks. She lived somewhere in Hawaii, got a fruit and nut plantation down there. Got a fruitcake plantation going on down there. And, you know, making fat money off of it. She didn't have to do this. She's not out of anything. Don't feel bad for her. Don't hate her. Don't uphold her either. Because like I said, you know, she's probably of a level of mental illness that we don't even want to talk about. Just pray for Roseanne. That's all we're going to say. What do we got? We got about 20 minutes left. I want to talk a little bit about tequila. Mezcal used to be my favorite. No, I'm not talking about that. When I talk about tequila, I'm talking about the Islamic doctrine, the Muslim doctrine of deceit, of dishonesty when it comes to dealing with Christians or Jews or anyone who's not a Muslim. It's okay. Lying to the infidel, okay, lying to the white devil, lying to the Christian or the Jew or the Buddhist or the Coptic or the Orthodox, it's not a sin. We want you to. You don't need to be decent or honest with those subspecies, and they're not, you know. And so that's why I have this problem accepting at face value any Islamic leader, any Muslim leader who claims to be moderate in his thinking, in his indoctrination. And I'm sure there are. Not every Muslim on earth is a terrorist, regardless of the fact that a large number, like 99.88% of terrorists or Muslims. The problem is, if you understand this doctrine of tekiya, it's difficult not to suspect every Muslim in some way, some fashion, especially Muslim politicians. Now, Muslim politicians in the Western world come in two classes. The rare ones who are honest and upfront about their desire to transform the West in accordance with the dictates of the Quran, and the others who are far greater in number who prefer to disguise that ambition. You've got some that are working throughout Europe, especially in Sweden. He's a member of parliament. This guy's a member of parliament. His name is Abdirazak Waberi. He believes in banning music and dancing. He believes in prohibiting boys and girls from socializing. He believes in allowing men to beat their four wives with sticks when they become disobedient. You've got city councilmen in Brussels openly advocating for Sharia government. So you have all these different politicians. Not so much in America. Most of this has taken place in the Western and Northern European countries. You see it a lot in Italy too. And the United Kingdom. Good heavens. For the first time in 200 years, London, as a result of Islamic terror attacks, knife attacks, acid attacks, and just in general lawlessness from a feckless Muslim mayor and a hapless law enforcement community, for the first time in 200 years, London has overtaken New York as the murder capital of the planet. London. And this concept of taqiyya, and that's the Arabic name for it, lying to infidels. And it's one of the main and probably one of the most important weapons of Islam in its eternal war with non-believers. And they've used it to great effect in Europe. They want nothing to do with assimilation. Now, in the old days, and it didn't matter much where you came from, east or west, Muslim, Jew, Christian, didn't matter. When you came to America, the expectation was that to a large extent, while you would cling to those memories and that heritage, you were going to leave the old ways behind. And why would you do that? Well, you came to America to be an American, to live the American way of life. Well, how do you do that? Well, you got to get to America first. You got to become an American citizen. Then you go out and you get a job and you become a productive member of society and you assimilate, you adopt American ways. Why? Well, because, damn it, you're an American now. Sure, Americans love spaghetti. Sure, Americans love how to make wine. Americans like goats to a certain extent. But you get the idea. And that way of life is unique. And that's why everyone in the world wants to come here. But see, the problem is, what kind of American citizen do you have? Just checking to make sure I'd hit the mute button at the end of the musical break. Sometimes I'll ramble and forget. That would have sucked. Anyway, You know, what kind of an American citizen do we have? And further, and this is the serious question, what is the value of this citizen who refuses to assimilate, who comes to this country for its entitlements, for its benefits, for its social welfare provisions? But isn't interested in at least acknowledging and respecting the customs and the ways of this country. And that's a problem that we have. And how do we assign value to someone? What value can you assign to someone who elects not to be a productive member of society, to live off society, to live off the efforts of the working individual, who does not understand the country's history, the country's heritage? And I'm not being racist, although you might make the case for being a little bit xenophobic. Those are not the kind of American citizens I wish to see coming to this country. And I think that it's really not the kind of, beyond the Democrats who see these people as potential voters to what? Secure their power base. Because in reality, as we said in the first half of the program, Democrats don't love immigrants. Democrats don't love illegal aliens. They love their power. And they will bend over backwards to make sure that every immigrant that comes into this country doesn't have to do a damn thing except get their check and vote Democrat. Now, that's an awfully cynical way to put things, but it's no less correct because of it, I think. Again, the left doesn't love abortion. The left doesn't love the right of women to have abortion, but the left loves the votes that people who love abortion give them. The left doesn't care about gay people at all. Doesn't mean a thing to them. But the left cares a great deal about the votes that those gay people will toss in their direction if the left says, you know, we love gay people. Gay people rock. We don't think there's anything wrong with gay people. That's why you should vote for us. So I think we have to be a little more, and nobody likes the word, but I'm going to go ahead and say it, discriminating in who we allow to come into this country. Vladimir Putin said this, and I know, communist strongman, I got you, whatever. He said immigrants, Russia doesn't need immigrants. Immigrants need Russia, that's why they come here. And if you're going to come here, you're going to adopt our ways, or we're not going to put up with it. I understand that. So who do we want in this country? Do we want some guy from Mexico who came through Mexico? You know, he's from Guatemala, but he came through Mexico as part of the MS-13 train. He's already been in here a couple of times. Is this guy going to go to work at Starbucks? Well, hell no. This guy's going to rob Starbucks and rape the manager and then cut off some teenage boy's head just for kicks, because that's what the hell they do. Not that we need another barista, but, you know, if I've got to pick, I think I'm going to have, you know, the coffee babe or dude, whatever, than an MS-13 guy. doctors, engineers, nurses, code guys, IT guys. There are 100 million IT jobs out there. I found this out the other day at a technology seminar I was forced to undergo yesterday. And if the presenter is to be believed, and I have no reason to think that they shouldn't be, there are almost 100 million jobs in the technical industry, in computers, writing code, that sort of thing, that are unfilled in this country, just waiting on some cat that knows how to write code. Okay, let's get those guys in here. All right. Do we have any Mexicans like that? Do we have any Guatemalans like that? Egyptians, Colombians, Filipinos, do we have anybody, you know, that can do those jobs? Those are the people we want. The people that are willing to come here, the people that understand they're coming here because of the great potential for success that America still, and I think we see a resurgence of it now under the current presidential administration, offers. I mean, that's pretty clear choice as far as I'm concerned. We have gone all the way around the pole on this one. There, we started talking. We've been all over the place, and you know what? This is kind of a good show. I kind of like it when we cover a lot of bases too often, and I'm aware of this, and I try to change it and try and, you know, keep things mixed up. Too often, I kind of bore in on a specific issue, and you know, I just chew it to shreds. And then anytime there's an update, I'll tell you guys about it, and then I'll chew that to shreds. But some of these stories, you know, that I share with you, they resonate with me for a reason. And I share them with you, obviously, for a reason. I want you to know about it. And I just want to share my thoughts on them. But we've talked about a lot of different things tonight, and that's always a refreshing thing to do. We got 2 minutes left, and honestly, I'm danged if I know what I'm going to talk about. We should be getting the Inspector General's report here anytime soon. There's been a lot of brouhaha in, you know, hey, you know what? Tomorrow, if I'm looking at my calendar, right? Yes, tomorrow is June the 6th, 2018. Yeah, thanks, honey. 74 years ago, fellas were loaded up on troop ships and LSTs, and they were boarding gliders, C-47 aircraft, cargo aircraft, and they were getting ready to cross. They were getting ready to cross the channel and begin the invasion of Europe. Tomorrow marks that anniversary. Think about those fellas. Plus, thank you, Guinevere. It also marks the anniversary, the 76th anniversary of the Battle of Midway, a great turning point in the war in the Pacific. Heroes everywhere, where valor, uncommon valor was a common virtue all throughout the war with those fellas. That's all the time we got. Be mindful of that. And thank your lucky stars and stripes. You're living in the greatest country that has ever graced this planet. I'm James Bostic. This has been A Conservative's Perspective. We'll be back on Thursday taking a look at things the way we do. Until then, God bless each and every one of you. God bless America, and we'll talk to you on Thursday. Take care.